from sunny St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. This is the Keto Woman Podcast, brought to you by me, Daisy Brackenhall. Hello, keto lovelies, and welcome to episode number 207. This week, I welcome back Susie Edge to the podcast. She's been on a couple of times before, and it's been a while since we chatted. I've seen some posts from her recently about how she's been struggling to get back on the keto track, and that made me think it would make a good new format. As you know, I've been enjoying coming up with these new format episodes with different themes, and so I thought this was the perfect opportunity to create another one. I haven't actually come up with a fancy title for it yet. My brain is frazzled and I couldn't think of one. So if you have any bright ideas, do let me know. But the basis for it is, what happens when you're struggling on keto and things all go a bit hideously wrong? Now, I think most of us have been in that situation at some time or other. Sometimes it's very easy to pick things back up and get back on track, and other times it's a lot harder. And I think it can be really difficult when you see people around you, especially on social media, shouting about how wonderful keto is and how fabulous they are doing. And if you're not careful, you can end up feeling rather alone and fall back into that bad old habit that lots of us have got into before of just blaming ourselves. It must be me. It must be me who's doing something wrong. And of course, more often than not, it's not your fault. And as is so often the case, different things work for different people. So I thought it would be great to speak to a variety of those people to find out which tips and strategies they found that really helped them get back on track, help them get their keto mojo back. I do drop a minor swear word at the beginning of this episode. Apologies for that. I'm not even sure if it counts as a swear word. My brother has a categorization when it comes to his kids, but I think this one is probably reasonably high up there. But if you know me in my Facebook group, or when I'm not trying to be reasonably polite on the podcast, you'll know I'm quite sweary. So occasionally they do slip out. It has been quite a busy week. The electrician has been back, and the guy who's doing the floors has started doing the floors, which creates a fair bit of noise and also a fair bit of work for me. Endless cups of tea and questions and needing this and needing that and all those things. I always forget how much time it ends up taking up. Never mind the fact that I just find it generally stressful having people in the house all the time. But it's coming on and it's looking great. So basically, it's all good news on the building front. I did also end up having a conversation with somebody who knows the builder who vanished. The one, if you remember, that I did get on very well with, or at least thought I did, but haven't been able to get hold of him for weeks, if not months now. Well, it turns out that nothing bad has happened to him. He's just got rather overwhelmed with work and has been behaving a little bit badly. So I am no longer trying to get in touch with him. I'm drawing a line under it and looking for somebody else to do the remainder of the work. Even though that is a big nuisance, I feel a lot better about it. I'm one of these people who gets anxious when I don't know what's going on. Once I know what the options are, I can figure out what to do. But anything else, I just find incredibly stressful. So actually, I'm feeling fine about it. Yes, it's frustrating, but it's far less frustrating than not knowing what's going on. This way, that's it. Line drawn. Let's find somebody else. I can't remember the last time I had a swim. It's been over a week now. There have been pollution warnings and it's also been very, very windy. So I haven't fancied getting tumbled in the shingle. But by all accounts, the weather looks set to be quite nice for the week ahead and the wind is calming down a little. So I'm hoping to get in maybe tomorrow, but definitely over the weekend. I went on the train for the first time, not for the first time ever being on a train, obviously, but the first time I've been on a train from my local station, which is just a few minutes down the road. It's so convenient. I went for an appointment at the hospital to test my eyes. And they did advise that I shouldn't drive because they might be putting some eye drops in. And when I had a look on the map to see where the hospital was in relation to the station, it wasn't too far, about a mile from the station. So I figured, well, you know, I'll just get the train and walk. Good exercise. And it was very good. I think probably a lot quicker door to door than if I'd driven, to be perfectly honest. And I like trains, one of my favourite forms of transport. So that was good fun. And I'm on the train again on Sunday. I'm going up to London to help my brother with my niece's birthday outing. We are going to the cinema to see, I think, the cartoon Addams Family 2. Which reminds me, I need to catch up and watch the first one, which I might do this evening while I eat my wings for dinner. And then I believe we're going out for pizza. Hopefully there will be something on the menu I can have. Otherwise, I'll be grabbing something on the way home. But I'm looking forward to it. It will be fun. It's always difficult thinking what to get people for their birthdays. And I did ask Rudy the other day what she'd like, and she didn't know. I know what it's like when people are asking you what you want for your birthday. And yes, there's probably one big special thing you want. But when it comes to the little bits and pieces from people, it's, oh, I don't know. So I went to a shop just up the road that I've been itching to go into actually since I got here and haven't gotten around to it yet. It's called Teddy Tinkers. And it's a sort of vintage, antique-y, got all sorts of bits and pieces in its shop. So I went and had a good old rummage around and I found a couple of things that I think she'll like. She's very into fashion and has a really quirky individual look. You wouldn't believe that she's only 7 years old or nearly 7 years old. Or is she coming up eight? I better check that, hadn't I? But anyway, you would think that she's a teenager. She's so grown up looking. She's a real typical Londoner. She's very fashion conscious and really good fun. So I thought, well, you're never too young for vintage. I found a really nice vintage beaded handbag and a very pretty shell, I think it is, necklace. So hopefully she's going to like those. They will at least be something different that she's not expecting. I also feel very lucky to have found a local dog sitter, and this will be the first time she's looked after my dogs. She did come to meet them the other day and they loved her. Amy just climbed on her lap and spent the whole time she was here being adored. So I'm sure they're going to get on very well together. I can't think of anything else. Oh, the eye test at the hospital. That is something interesting, actually. They really didn't seem to think that there's much wrong with my eyes at all. They couldn't see any difference in the pupil size, really, to speak of. Certainly nothing to worry about. And they both react well to changes in light. So it was definitely overkill, really, that the optician sent me there. However, she did talk to me about the convergence issue that I have, and she gave me this exercise to do where I have to focus on dots to try and, well, basically work the muscles in my eyes to try and correct it that way, rather than trying to do it with glasses, which certainly hasn't worked, as you'll have heard me speak about before. I've been through so many different lenses now, and I just haven't been able to get on with any of them. And funnily enough, I had completely forgotten, but years and years ago, decades ago, actually, I went to an optician potentially to get some reading glasses, and one optician did indeed prescribe me some reading glasses, which I started to use, but funnily enough, didn't really get on with them. So I went for a second opinion, and they told me that I needed to exercise my eye muscles. And the exercise they told me to do was to alternate between focusing on something in the distance and something like holding my finger up quite close to my eyes and going between the two. And I'd forgotten about that, but this brought it all back. So that is something that obviously I should have kept up all these years. So I've been doing that regularly every day. And actually, I can kind of feel like it might be working. But the consultant at the hospital has referred me to an appointment with someone who's a specialist in convergence issues. I forget what they're called. A convergence-ist? That's not it, but it was something like that. And hopefully I'll have an appointment in a few weeks. And she said they'll be able to test whether doing these exercises regularly has had a positive impact or not. So I've just been doing them 3 or so times a day. And like I say, it certainly feels like something's working. So we shall see. It might be that I don't need glasses at all. I do certainly need reading glasses, actually, for something at a certain distance. You know, when I'm reading a book or I need to look at instructions or read information on a pill packet or something like that. But I've just got some cheap off the shelf magnifying glasses, basically, that does the job perfectly adequately for that. So I just feel a bit like all this messing around, going backwards and forwards to the opticians. In some ways, I suppose, was a waste of time. But then in others, if it got me to this point of finding the right person to give me the right things to do to help with it, I suppose it wasn't actually a waste of time, was it? We shall see. I shall let you know. Before we get started on this episode, I just want to give a shout out and a very big thank you to Darla Fitzpatrick. She is my latest Patreon and has chosen to support me and this podcast, as well as my other podcast that I record with my good friend and co-host Terry Lance, by supporting me on Patreon. So thank you very much, Darla. I really do appreciate it. And eagle-eyed Darla, or actually not eagle-eyed, what would it be when you spot something when listening on the podcast? You know what I mean. She spotted a mistake that I made on Monday Mindset. I thought Terry had made a mistake and got aerobic and anaerobic mixed up. So I spent ages trying to perform editing magic, replacing one with the other. I should have known better than to doubt Terry, because it was me who messed it up and Darla spotted it. So thank you, Darla. When I have some time, I will go back and replace it. It will still be wrong on YouTube, but everywhere else it will be right. So thank you once again, Darla. If you fancy supporting me like Darla did via Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/ketowoman. Now, because I have been a bit swamped with editing work, and also the environment has been rather noisy for recording new episodes, I have run out of stock to edit. So I decided to split this episode, which ran a little bit long, but not quite long enough really to split into two episodes. But I decided anyway to split it to give myself an extra week. And handily, there was a particularly annoying cliffhanger moment, which is where I've ended this week. So you'll have to tune back in next week to find out what happened next. I had planned for this to be another shorter format type episode, but Susie and I got chatting about all sorts of interesting things, and so it ended up running into much more of a normal length episode, plus a little bit more. Anyway, I have rambled on for far too long, so I shall leave you now with the first part of a to-be-named new format episode. If you have any bright ideas, do let me know. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you on the other side. Welcome back, Susie, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well, thanks, Daisy. It's good to see you, and it's been a long time.
It has been a long time. I meant to look up quite how long. I am not sure. I know we spoke just after the last PhD conference that we both went to, which we think was 2019, but I can't remember when your original episode was. Quite a bit before that.
Do you know, I think it was in the summer of 2018.
It might well have been.
Yeah, things were really in the, I was doing so well. Everything was wonderful. I was evangelical. everything was sort of very much at the height of keto's wonderful and all the rest of it then. So a lot's happened since.
In that honeymoon phase.
Yes. Yeah, we were.
I've seen the odd post from you over the years. It's amazing how quickly time flies, isn't it? But as you know, I've got quite into these themed episodes. So when I saw you chatting in, I think it might have been Dan's group the other day.
Yeah.
I thought, wouldn't it be good to have another themed episode along the lines of what happens after you've been through the honeymoon phase and everything starts turning to shit type position? Because I think so many of us go through that, or at least have periods of time where, you know, everything just seems to go a bit wrong. And ideas and experiences and strategies that have helped to get you back on track. Because like I say, I think it's such a common thing. We were talking a bit before we started that I think anyone who comes into keto with a history of disordered eating of some kind, certainly anyone who's struggled with food addictions and cravings that they can't seem to control. Although when it's all new, keto seems to solve those problems, at least for a while. I've certainly found that rubs off after a while. It doesn't last forever. And all those old crutches that we've gotten used to using over the years sort of come back in. I think it's such a common thing. So, you know, when you were talking about it, and I know you've managed to pull things together and pick yourself back up, I thought, well, how useful might that be to have a bit of a series just talking about those experiences and helping other people out there? Because I think apart from anything else, especially if you're only seeing those posts when we're in that evangelical phase, and if you're struggling, you sometimes feel a little bit alone, thinking, well, all these people around me seem to be doing so well and not having any problems. Why am I struggling on keto? So I think the more we can share these stories and some tips, the better.
I certainly am really guilty of going quiet on social media when things are not going too well. I don't want to be, because I think, well, who am I to be talking about these things when it's not going well for me? So I don't say much. And then I'll have a, you know, somebody like Dan will say, hey, where are you? How are you doing? You know, and I think, well, actually, things haven't been great. And that's why I've been quiet. And there was a good period there where I just completely switched off from all of that. And I forgot that to do so means that you then lose track of the people who are in the same boat. And coming back and being more vocal and more chatty and now more helpful myself, I'm finding so many more people have been through in the last 18 months, if nothing else, have been really through it. And as you say, going back to those old ways of trying to deal with things. I was going to say of those old ways of dealing with things by going to the fridge, but actually it's not dealing with it, is it? If we go back to that time that you were talking about, the summer of 2018, when I lost a lot of weight, or at least body fat percentage, and things were going really well. I started martial arts again, which was really important to me, and that was going really well. I was doing it with my kids. And later in that year, in fact, a year ago, 3 years ago today, I fell and broke my arm. Completely smashed my wrist to pieces. Yeah. I wasn't doing martial arts at the time. I'd been doing it all day. And I came home, my kids were playing football in the garden or playing keepy uppy. And I thought, you know, you got to show a 10-year-old how it's done. So I grabbed a ball, took two. I think I only managed to kick the ball twice. And I just fell onto my arm and smashed it up. And that needed surgery. And then I had this period in hospital, which was rough because I had all these ideas about food and they were just being completely trodden on in my own department because I worked in orthopedic surgery.
I remember.
The nurses were having a go at me for not choosing anything from the breakfast menu because it was just a pile of rubbish. They were annoyed with me for just having black coffee for breakfast because you can't live on that and your arm will never heal if you don't eat this crap that we're wanting to serve you. I went through all of that, came away from that, and of course it's all very well having these ideas, but if you can't drive yourself to the shop or you know really feed yourself properly and everything's bad and you're in pain, you do tend to just fall back on the cookies.
Well, and the problem is if you have that addictive side to your nature with things like that, it can feel a bit like you're on the edge of a precipice. And once you start falling off, it's really difficult, especially if you've got all these other things going on. It's really difficult to claw your way back up.
It is, but always in my mind, I'm justifying it. You know, it's just today. It's just a few carbs and seed oils today. It's you know, tomorrow I'll be fine. Tomorrow it'll be grand. I'll wake up and have a steak. And it just...
Yeah, but what you forget is by tomorrow, they'll have got you.
Totally.
By the short and curlies.
Totally. You just tell yourself that it's just for now. And it's not the case, because they really do get inside and get to you. And actually, you mentioned Dan earlier. I was listening to him on a podcast the other day. He was saying that, you know, he was away doing what he did in far-flung places and had had some of a meal that wouldn't have been ideal, but he was the same. He said to himself, it'll be fine today. And then, you know, months later, oh, hang on, what happened here? We're back to square one. And that really was how it was. And I've kept a record of my weight. And I know that weight and scales are not ideal, but we still do it. And I still do it. And I use the Happy Scales app, and it shows my weight over that time. And it's really funny, because I can see where I broke my arm, and I can see the zigzagging since. So I struggled to get over that. And I got into this situation where I was half-assing keto, which is just, I think, the worst situation to be in, because you're telling yourself all of this fat is wonderful, all of this saturated fat is grand, and then knocking back all the sugars a few hours later, and, you know, a few hours for your body, it's still all the same stuff going in, isn't it? And I'm sure my body was like, yes, we're at it again. All this good stuff. And I started putting on the pounds, started getting sore, started finding that my martial arts were, I was a struggle and everything, always a niggle, always something. And I'm like, well, it's because I'm 40 odd, you know, and all those justifications come back. Oh yeah, it's because you're 42 and all the kids around you are not. That's why you're the one that's sore. Keep justifying to myself in that way. And then of course we hit 2020. I was doing really well at the beginning of 2020. I was getting fit again. I was getting quite slender. I went out and bought a beautiful new dress, because I had I had drinks with Prince Charles at his house.
And fancy.
Yes. And a week later, I got sick.
What was that in aid of then? I mean, not everyone gets after drinks round at Prince Charles's gaff.
Actually,
is that Highgrove?
No, well, we're near Balmoral, so his house is...
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Burke Hall, it's called, on the Balmoral estate. So very nice.
I bet.
It was too dark to see much. But anyway, so I went along to that and had a curry afterwards, which was fascinating, because I had a CGM on at the time and I could see what happened. And, you know, I was very quickly back into ketosis, and it was all grand. A week later, I got sick. I developed some strange unknown respiratory virus, February 2020. Nobody knew what it was. Can't say either way what it was, but I have my suspicions. I was really unwell, coughing, wheezing, started twitching and getting cramps that got so bad I needed medical attention.
Yeah.
They discovered I had an acute kidney injury. So I'd had an insult from either dehydration or the sort of muscle breakdown products of the twitching or whatever, I don't know. But that was really bad. And it took me an age to recover from that. And just as I started recovering from that, everyone else got sick. Like, the whole world got sick at that point. So you had Lisa Bailey on your podcast a wee while ago as well. And I had done a recording with her that week. And I basically just coughed my whole way through it. It was dreadful when I went to edit it. I couldn't do anything with it, because it was just me coughing and being very unwell. So that was March. And of course, I'm, you know, medicating that with the cookies and the pan au chocolat and all the rest of it. And then we got into lockdown. I got recalled to the hospital to work, because every doctor who had left the GMC register in the last couple of years was recalled.
Got called back. Yeah, I remember reading about that.
And I was ready to go off and be the hero. And then my father died unexpectedly.
Oh, wow.
He died of complications of diabetes. And of course, it was in the middle of all of the restrictions, which made funerals and mourning and what have you very, very hard. So there's a lot been going on.
Gosh, it must have been, really hard.
A lot going on to sort of push against me and what have you. So things have just been up and down a fair bit. And then at some point, I can't remember when, I realised that I had to get back on track, because it was just going south. First thing I did was reach out to an online group that I'm involved with, a Facebook group that I'm in, Dan's UK UK low carb group, and I said, struggling guys, give me a hand. And there were some really nice responses. And I thought, okay, these guys are here, let's sort of have a think about what I'm going to do. And I sat down with a pen and a piece of paper and I had a think about where I'd been and where I was going and what I wanted and what my goals were. Physically, my goals were, of course, health and to try and avoid what my father went through, which was not just dropping dead unexpectedly. There was a long line of peripheral neuropathy and problems associated with diabetes for a few years before he died. Had to think about that and how I might avoid that. And I had to think about my physical goals. So I want to get a black belt in my martial arts. I started martial arts when I was 12 and I've never achieved it yet. So that was up there. And I thought, I can't do it at the weight that I'm at. And the niggles, the pain, the inflammation, the problems that I've got, I can't do it. So I had to think about what I might do next.
It's difficult, isn't it? Pinpointing that moment. What makes you think, right, I've got to get it together? Funnily enough, COVID, you know, when it all really started getting bad and big lockdowns and the association with metabolic health, which was highlighted pretty quickly, to be honest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was a motivator for me. I wasn't completely off plan. I haven't gone completely off plan for a long time. I might have had short periods, usually when I've been over to the UK and end up going off plan there. And then there's a bit of a spillover because I end up taking things back. But, you know, things have been very, very loosey-goosey with the odd bit of, you know, non-keto here and there getting more and more common. And it was something that motivated me, actually. I know a lot of people struggled with their keto in lockdown for various reasons. But for me, it sort of pushed me more the other way to really start tightening things up. But everyone has their different, you know, light bulb waking up moment. Right, enough's enough. I've got to pull this together. And sometimes, you know, it's not a black and white overnight thing. It might be, well, you know, I just don't feel like I've got the strength to do it all at once. I'm going to just take this one thing out first and we're going to go into it slowly. But like you say, it can be really difficult when you half-ass it because it does make it harder to do.
It's worse, I think.
Yeah, I can remember speaking to people who did you know, keto Monday to Friday and then what they wanted to on the weekends and felt that, well, this is, you know, this is kind of perfect because I still get my quote unquote treats at the weekend. And although I just, you know, tried to hint at the fact this is going to make it more difficult, people have to realize it for themselves, don't they? And yeah, before too long, it was, yeah, this is really hard. I'm finding that weekend is becoming Tuesday before I start, Wednesday before I start. It's just too hard because you're having to rely on willpower, which is a notoriously fickle thing.
Well, I had that. I remember talking to you about this the first time we chatted, that I read Gary Taubes' book, The Diet Delusion, 10 years before I actually got my act together and got on with it. But in that time, I was thinking, oh, I'm gonna have a go at that on a Monday. And I did that for years. And all I did was get fatter and more unfit and more unwell. So, yeah, it just, for me, it just did not work, this half-ass attempt at justifying things. It just didn't work. And it hasn't worked all my life. So I don't know why suddenly it would start working again. But that's how we roll, isn't it?
So what did you do? What was, you know, you sat down with your pen and paper, and you know, I know there have been some other changes as well in your life, which I'm really keen to hear about.
Yeah.
But when it came to getting back on track with keto, you know, what was your plan? Was it a right, I'm clearing everything out overnight? Because I mean, it's not, I have it easy in a lot of ways because it's just me, so I can clear house of anything that, because I'm really bad about not giving in to temptation. So the only way I can handle that is to not have it in the house. But, you know, it's not quite so easy for you. So what did you do? What were the steps to get you back on track?
Yeah, when you're talking about in the house, I live with carb eaters.
Really hard.
Yeah, and I have two, my daughters now are 13 or 14 next week and 12. And, you know, we have discussions and we have very, you know, my meals that I cook lean towards low carb and the snacks about the place tend to be, but there are others. The moment I'm in one of those moods where I can just happily walk past it and that's fine.
Which is great. Mind you, to be honest, I mean, I'm not a mum. So it's all very well saying what you would do if you were. But I mean, we all know that a diet that has too many processed and refined foods in it is not good for anyone. So I'm certainly not the kind of person who necessarily thinks it's a good idea or necessary to impose keto on your whole family. Sometimes it is a great idea if everyone is struggling with their metabolic health. But there are going to be different levels of carb tolerance in the household, especially if you've got kids. But to be honest, I think if I was a mum, I wouldn't have an issue with saying, right, we're not going to have processed and refined foods in the house, because this would be a good thing for all of you. However much you might not like it, this is good for your health. I can't necessarily control what you do outside the house, but in the house, no.
That's how I feel. I don't buy breakfast cereals and the like. They're just not there. So, yeah, and there are moments where we do have these discussions and I say, look, I'm not going to impose, actually, but I've sat them down and listened to podcasts with them or watched YouTube videos of people who I think are doing great things and talking about teenage bodies and how they're growing and what they need and what they don't need, etc. Mm. And I mean, I've had really conversations where, you know, my daughter said something like, oh, I'm going to have bacon and eggs before we go and do this martial arts grading because I know I'll last throughout the whole day and that'll be really, I'll feel much better. And I've gone, yes, absolutely wonderful. And there's been other times when it's a party or something's going on out and about and it's just, you know, raid the ice cream shop. And it's fine. I'm not going to say 100% of the time that that's the case, but I do have these conversations and I I don't always win. I don't always win, but at least we're having the conversations and I'm giving them the understanding and the knowledge of where I'm coming from for them to make.
Yeah, because you can, I mean, you can never impose rules really on a teenager, can you? That's a bit of a futile strategy, I would imagine.
I think you can impose them on anyone, to be honest. I've got friends.
Well, that's true.
Friends driving me potty at the moment who are, you know, complaining like mad on Facebook in the morning that they're, you know, in pain or overweight or suffering with this, that, and the other. And then a couple of hours later, they're posting pictures of their seed oil laden, sugar filled vegan cakes because they need a treat.
So hard.
At the cafe. And I've given up, actually. Well, let's probably come to that, actually. Because, yeah, you asked me what I've done since to get going. But actually, if we take a wee step back, I did get complete keto kind of overwhelm. Talking about it, trying to convince people, being out there, discussing it, it just became too much because the response is either 100%, wow, this is amazing, let's do it, or the majority of the time it's shut up. I'm not interested. You know, oh, she's off again. And I had a bit too much about that. And then within all the things, so I'm a podcast addict. I listen to so many in this community and others. And, you know, I was listening to yours and to Keto Dudes and UK Low Carb and Diet Doctor and Low Carb MD, Sean Baker, Paul Saladino, all these guys. I was following them on Twitter, watching the discussions, and everyone started getting at each other. Mm. Everyone started squabbling. Mm. And COVID aside, because there was a lot of just train crashes when COVID happened.
Oh, you know, that brought all sorts of stuff out there.
Yeah, a lot going on with overcomings and
political things. Yeah. And just got a bit crazy. There's always been divisiveness in the keto community. You know, let's not pretend it was all sunshine and roses. But it's definitely the last year or two, it's definitely ramped up a good few notches, hasn't it?
It got really bad to the point where I just started just taking them off my phone and not going back to them. And then at one point, Paul Saladino and Sean Baker, two guys who I listen to and, you know, I'm quite interested in what they've got to say. Paul very much on the biochemistry. I love listening to all of that, the hyperlipid blog and all that sort of stuff. I'm into that. But it just got to the point where they were making videos having a go at each other. Mm. And I thought, enough. I can't deal with me and deal with them. And I just don't know who's right. I don't know what to do. So I'll just eat another croissant. Mm. Oh, the croissant diet. There's that one as well. So I'll put some Nutella on a croissant or something. I don't know. It just got to the point where I was just overwhelmed by it all. And I was a bit fed up with the fact that I hadn't. And I was very annoyed with myself at the fact that I hadn't been able to keep on track, despite all of the insults that were coming from outside. I was annoyed with myself. So I got really angry with all that. And then when I decided to come back, and there was a trigger moment, actually, I was in bed one morning and I had a niggle in my back down into my hips, and I tried to roll over in bed and I couldn't. I was just so sore. I thought, this isn't right. And the first thing I need to do is go back to what I'm eating, because that's the low hanging fruit. You know, I can carry on doing my martial arts and my stretches and things like, you know, I have cold showers every day and all that stuff. But the low hanging fruit is to stop the hobnobs and get back on the bacon and eggs. Mm. So the first thing I did was speak to the guys online that weren't full of drama. And Dan and his Low-K U-Carb group, definitely less drama, very little drama.
Absolutely.
And I had some, you know, and I listened to Aranda and what have you.
Yeah, Aranda's a nice guy.
He is, and he's full of help. So I sat down with my pen and paper, and the first thing I considered was my triggers, what was setting me off.
Good plan.
And always what would set me off was coming out of a routine, a birthday party, a family celebration, a family get together. Coming out of routines in that way really just throws me, because I'm just like, okay, just this once. And of course, it's never just this once, but you tell yourself that. So I decided, how can I mitigate that? Well, I'll have a think about just saying no, or preparing the food myself, or just being more diligent on car journeys and that sort of thing. As we came out of lockdown and I started going to see family members.
Yes, and that makes a difference, doesn't it? I mean, people talk about taking alternative foods and doing all those kinds of things, and I've never really got round to it. But I did make that effort when I went on a camping trip with my family, because I had a feeling it would be difficult. Apart from anything, they're pretty well doing plant-based stuff now, so I knew it was going to be a lot of carby stuff. And so I took most of my food with me, and it, you know, it takes some preparation, it takes some thought, it takes some planning, but boy, does it actually really make a difference.
I think everything comes down to planning. I think everything on my list just really came down to planning, being aware of the triggers and seeing how best I could avoid them.
Getting in there early rather than sort of, oh, it'll be okay, I'll think of something on the spur of the moment.
Yes, no, exactly. Exactly. And that comes down to not just those things as well, but actually meal planning for the family for the whole week. I mean, people have been telling me that since I became an adult. And eventually I did it, and it worked. Not only did it work with what I was buying and spending in the supermarket, it worked in terms of what we were eating. And, you know, who knew? It was incredible. Who knew? So I started making weekly plans with the food. You know, going, there's one family member nearby who, it's hard. Let's put it that way. It's hard to go to visit her. She's just, there's no malice. She's just a feeder. She has a different view of the world and, you know, has had it twice as long as I've been alive. So there's no changing that. Mm. And so that was hard. So I decided to come up with ways to deal with that. I take, you know, I take my own cream and things like that, just to pop in my coffee, just to, that very action of taking my cream and putting it in my coffee helps me say no to the biscuits that are coming, the biscuit barrel that's going to come out, or the special cakes that she's bought because we're going. And that's very difficult to navigate sometimes.
Yeah, it's very difficult to turn things down when someone's gone to effort. Yeah. But I think that's also part of the planning, is to say, hey, look, you know, by all means, get these for other people, but please don't take offence. I'll be bringing something of my own. It's one of the things I did when I went camping. I ordered a load of Dan's cakes and I took those with me, so that when everyone, because I was pretty sure that there would be some sweet stuff happening, and they did. They got out these giant marshmallows and made s'mores with chocolate hobnobs and things. I would have found it really, really hard to not have one of those, which of course they offered me, if I hadn't have had a tasty cake to eat myself. But it was a lot easier to say no when it wasn't a question of saying no and having nothing.
Yep.
It was a question of saying no, I'm going to have my own sweet treat that's going to hit that spot. And you also then, you're joining in with the everyone having a sweet treat. But that, you know, that extra bit of planning might be navigating the feelings of the feeder in question.
Yes. It's all very well saying, oh, yes, but when you eat a lot of, when you're keto or you eat a lot of fat or whatever, you're satiated and you're not, and you can just fast through that. You can just fast through that. You don't have to eat.
No,
no you don't. But as you say, there are other factors involved. Being one of the group, worrying about the person who's providing or feeling like they're providing, who's worrying about you and those things, they have to be considered as well.
And let's be honest, how often do we eat sweet things because we're hungry?
Oh,
never.
Never. Is it Robert Sywas who says that snacking's always an emotional event and those things are always an emotional event? Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it comes into mitigation, I guess. What else did I do? I had to think about my daily routine as well. And my daily routine has changed a lot because you mentioned life has changed. Well, I no longer work in clinical medicine. I stormed off in a huff. I just got so fed up of the whole system and the whole way it was. And I could never be a Dr. David Unwin. I was nowhere near that level in my training. Mm. And therefore, I just couldn't spend, I couldn't face another 6-7 years getting to that point. Not at my age. So I left, I've left clinical medicine and now I write history books.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'd done, while I was losing the plot with medicine, I had to find something that was really going to keep me motivated to get out of bed and put up with all of that working in the hospital. So I did a master's in modern history. And then from there, I ended up making, when we went into lockdown, I started making fun, short videos on TikTok of all places. I gathered quite a nice following and then I got a book deal to turn it all into a book.
Wow, fantastic. Tell me more about that. That's really exciting.
The book is about the deaths of the kings and queens of England and Scotland, well, since 1066. So 1,000 years of royal drama and trauma and goo and gore and all the
plenty of that
the stuff that people love. I got a you know, a fantastic, I went through this wonderful process of pitching because I got an agent who got in touch with me via that. She's amazing. And so I ended up, you know, in these Zoom meetings pitching to various publishers, people whose names I've grown up with.
How fabulous.
You know, Penguin and all these people. And that was just a, such a treat. And so we got a book deal out of that. And now I'm head down in the blood and guts of royalty in the last 1,000 years. So that's what I do now. And that works quite well 9 to 5 because I work at home and now my husband works at home because of COVID. So we have a really good routine. Our desks are fairly close and we stop for lunch together and what have you. And it just works really well. So being able to get into a routine has been huge.
It's because I remember part of your problems when you were working in the hospital, if you weren't taking food in with you, I can remember the conversation we were having about the, I seem to remember there was one thing that you could get, some kind of chicken product that wasn't particularly delicious, but it was
chicken
the
on
only
a stick.
Thing, that's right. It was the only thing that was vaguely keto at your disposal.
That was one of the reasons why I had to get out. You know, we know that people who work shifts, people who work in these environments are more susceptible to metabolic problems, to diabetes, to all the rest of it. We know that. I was already in trouble in that way. And I felt like it's all very well giving your life to looking after other people, but I was literally giving my life looking after other people in that way. And I had to step back. And there are people who can do that. And there are people who can stay awake all night operating and who can still be smiling in the morning, knock down a can of Coke and be back an hour later in the operating theatre. And I just was not one of those people. And I felt like I was just breaking myself. And yeah, taking in food in that way for me, okay, I got the hang of that. I was feeding myself well on my shifts. But then, of course, it was the looking after day in, day out, this conveyor belt of people who were coming in for operations they were having because of the lifestyles that we've been leading for the last 40, 50, 60 years, and nothing's ever changing.
I remember. And then you're, you know, force feeding them more rubbish, which you were on the receiving end of course.
Yeah. And I tweeted a picture of the menu when I had broken my arm for breakfast, I think it was, and it was appalling. And there was a fair bit of support for that tweet, but there was an awful lot of dietitians. There were an awful lot of dietitians who just laid into me, saying I didn't know what I was talking about, and bless me, and all that sort of stuff. And oh, you know, didn't you know there was vitamin C in the orange juice, darling, and that sort of thing. And I was just blown away by that.
You've got to be quite strong to be able to deal with that when it's just this incessant noise. I can remember getting in trouble in hospital when I was in for one of my operations to do with bariatric surgery, because they threatened to not let me leave until I was eating. They were making me eat like 7 times a day or something, and all this sweet stuff, and you know, and I didn't want it. I think I ended up hiding it in my bag because they, yeah, they really did threaten, well, we're not going to check you out until we've seen you eating this stuff.
And I don't see how it's, you could argue that to throw my toys out of the pram and leave is not helping anybody apart from myself. And yeah, that's fine. Oh, but
how can you help other people if you're sick yourself?
Yes,
you
know, absolutely. There's absolutely that. I reached the point where I, you know, not well myself. I'm not looking after anybody else. And I would go into work and have these conversations with nurses at lunchtime about what we were eating and what effect it was having on us. They were all interested because they'd seen my weight loss. Mm. Weight loss is such a good visual.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. You can see it in people. Sorry, fat loss. fat loss because I got big muscles now. But you can see it in people, and people are interested. And then half of the nurses in the room would, I could see them being super interested. And the other half, not like just not wanting to take it on. Mm. And yeah, it was tough going because I could see a lot of them becoming sick, and I could see the problems that were coming for them in the same environment, doing those long night shifts, running into those difficulties under the lights every night. And it was painful to see. And I just don't see how it's going to change. I just can't.
No.
I can't imagine, you know, people, oh, you know, if we do this and we do that. And I just can't see it changing. And I was very, very frustrated with that.
Mm. Like you say, not everybody can be the Unwins of this world. I mean, I think it is changing, but it's so painfully slow. You need, I would imagine anyway, that you need to be in a certain position of influence to be able to change. I mean, look at, you know, Asim Malhotra is really affecting change now, as an example, another example. So there are people who are able to start making the change, but I can understand that if you just know you can't, what's the point in keep banging your head against the wall? There are other ways that you can help people.
Do you know what's really funny is that now I have...
Thank you for staying with me right to the end. I'm sorry to leave it on such a cliffhanger, but it was so handy at just about the right moment that I needed to split the episodes in two. You can find out next week what Susie has so much of. But for now, I shall leave you with this week's end quote from James Clear. If you want to find a better path, you will have to be willing to explore a different path. That sounds simple, but how often do you try something different? Until next time, I hope you're heading into a fabulous weekend. Please take very good care, and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.